This is a CC Radio podcast.
Hey, good listener. This is Paul coming at you with a bit of an explanation as to what's going on in today's feature review. If you're new to the show, welcome. We don't normally review contemporary films, films that have just been released, or TV shows that are really doing the rounds right at the moment. But on this occasion, we had a huge cock-up in terms of our recording where Audacity sort of killed our exported file and I didn't check it closely enough. And by the time I came to edit, well, there was only 20% of it there. So long story short, we've decided, having run completely out of time to re-record, that we would release this classic Patreon-only episode from a year or two ago where we reviewed Inglourious Basterds. We thought that's a nice timing with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood having just hit the States and is on its way here to us in Australia. So Quentin Tarantino's classic film, which many consider his best, we answer whether it is his best film in our opinion, and indeed give some pretty detailed thoughts about it. So our apologies that Hobbs and Shaw won't be getting the review that it deserves. Instead, here is our alternative, Inglourious Basterds from 2009. Enjoy. Welcome along to the countdown Patreon-only review of Inglourious Basterds.
Hello, patrons.
It's great to have you listening to us here. Thanks again so much for supporting the show. And this week, it's a bit of a weird one. We are still going through the ledger of everybody who has left a rating review and subscribed to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've decided to do one that was pretty accessible for us both.
Yep.
Inglourious Basterds.
Inglourious Basterds.
Quentin Tarantino's 2009 film. Now, this is from listener Ashley Gorski.
Hey, Ashley.
Is the host of Rabbit Ears TV podcast. Please head on over and check her great show out. And she wanted us to have a look at this. Can't remember the context in which we got into it a little bit. I basically said I only watched it the once back when it was released.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the film, but it was a little bit hazy in my memory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was made for $70 million and had a huge return of $321.5 million. So it was actually a big hit. Tarantino considered this his magnum opus. This is the film he thought was, at the time, going to be the best thing that he ever did.
Mm.
He sunk a lot of time into the script and apparently got very precious about it all. He has admitted. And it originally started out as a very much a Dirty Dozen type film.
Yeah.
Which was just bunch of bad dudes behind the lines in enemy Germany and Europe,
yep,
causing havoc. And then it evolved into having many more layers and threads.
Now, did I read somewhere that the script got leaked? Like,
I think you, well, maybe it did, but the more much more recent controversy for around Tarantino was The Hateful Eight being leaked.
Maybe it was that one, yeah.
So he almost shat, I mean, he did shit it and basically said, I'm not doing The Hateful Eight, and eventually came around to decide, nah, look, regards the fact that people have read it, it's still such a good script, I want to make it.
Mm.
Okay. It stars, among others, Brad Pitt, Christoph Waltz, Michael Fassbender, Eli Roth, Diane Kruger, Daniel Brühl, and Melanie Laurent.
Yes.
So, all the usual people. Sally Menke did the editing and cinematography by Robert Richardson. Now, Wayne, we are obviously going to spoil the shit out of this on these.
Yes, everyone who's listening to this has seen Inglourious Basterds.
If you haven't seen it, please turn off, go watch it, come back and listen to our thoughts.
Totally.
Give us your very general thoughts, Wayne.
All right, so I suspect, and I'm not sure, and I wanted to ask you if this was Tarantino's best film even so far now.
No.
It's not.
Not for me.
Does that honor go to Pulp Fiction?
No.
Does it go? Oh, it goes to Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
His first film.
Yep.
So he's Spielberging it up, where his first movie was his best one.
Yeah, but Spielberg did Duel before he did
Okay,
Jaws,
but like the Jaws one, I don't know, you know. So, oh, okay.
For me, but look, with the exception of one or two of his films, most notably Death Proof, every single Tarantino movie.
Yeah, fair enough. And he's that kind of guy.
You know, we could do a top 10 Tarantino films, but it'd be very similar.
Well, he done 10?
I think he's done 10
just
now.
10. Yep. Yeah. Best or worst. No. I think that the cool thing about this movie was, I don't know, like you said, it started like a Dirty Dozen type movie, but then I don't know if that draft had like the Colonel Hans Lander character in it, because he kind of makes the movie.
Oh,
now
that's a bingo!
Totally, right? Like, he's like, I mean, would you say that the best scene in the movie is the opening scene? Or would you say, because if it is, it's not by much.
Really, for me, this film is like, it's almost, circular is not the right word, but there's a very deliberate beat pacing to this film. It is,
yeah, it's the
tension,
long,
build up, explosion,
yep,
release. It's kind of like Blue Balls several times
over. A little
bit
Blue Balls-ish, yeah. Yes. No, I get
and
that.
And then we get another scene of lots of tension, release.
Now, here's the thing about Tarantino that I always have been, not bittersweet about, but just like, I don't know. It's he likes his characters talking. And for my money, he keeps him talking just a little too long. Now, I know that's his
cocaine
way.
Is a hell of a drug.
No, man, just a little too long, just a little too long. But not much, like seriously like 10 seconds too long. Because he does these scenes. He's known for these long scenes, which is heaps and heaps of dialogue. There is tension building. And yes, these characters are charismatic or funny or whatever, and it works out okay. But occasionally I go to myself, this is almost audience specific because... if you've got even a remotely short attention span, you could lose him. Maybe not so much now that he's known to be Quentin Tarantino and that's his style. But nevertheless, this front opening scene where, it's just he's getting, Landa's interrogating the farmer. And you don't know until about halfway through the scene that he's housing all these refugees or whatever. And I don't know, the whole pan down from under the fucking floor and you see the people hiding in the cellar. It was just cooler and cooler and cooler. And I remember going, this is going on forever, but I'm still interested. I think I've said this before, I was with my ex at the time who's like, she's like, I got to take a piss, but I cannot leave this seat because I know something awesome is going to happen. And something awesome does happen. So he lets the girl go.
Didn't let her go. He just cut. Well, I guess
he does.
Could have
he does because he could have fired at her and he goes,
with a pistol.
Like,
she's so far away. There's no way he was hitting anything.
It seemed to me like he went, you know what? I'll catch her later. Because he could have fired at least and tried to wound her and then get her.
He aims for a long time.
Yes.
And she's getting further and further
away. I think
he's
decided not to shoot her. Yeah.
And given where the film ends and how he becomes, what he ends up negotiating, I guess that maybe sort of kind of possibly fits.
I think.
But anyway, look, you're absolutely right. Some of the scenes do go on a fair while. I would say that one doesn't. That's an exception to the rule. That's an excellent scene.
I think it was the introduction to the movie. I'm like, well, I don't know. It felt like something was going to happen and it took a while. Mm. But having seen it again a few times now, it's awesome.
I think the thing that perplexes me a little bit about that scene is you don't know whether Hans honors his agreement with French guy, farmer who's harboring the Jews.
Yeah.
Does he kill them all after that?
I'm inclined to say yes.
I would have thought so, but they don't show it, which they were going to do.
Well, this is the thing, though. The thing about that character is he's really, really smart, right? And he's so smart that he can afford to be charismatic when he could easily just be an asshole. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's his thing. That's why he's interesting. So, I mean, but at the end of it all, I still think he's a fucking murdering asshole.
Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So even he'll say whatever, but I think he killed him.
Yeah, it fits, but the part of me wanted to see
it. No, I'd like it if he didn't, but, who knows?
So I think the film's very, very good. Mm. It does have its problems. It's not perfect.
Now, what are the problems with the film?
One, apart from it being a little bit long in places, it's also a bit tonally inconsistent. So,
insofar as what?
Well, we jump around between these two storylines. So we've got.
That's his thing, though.
Yeah, like it is. Except, like, for example, we get introduced to the bastards.
Yes.
Very, very quickly. So quickly, in fact, that you almost don't know all their names.
That's true. Because, and I remember in the trailer, there's scenes of the short guy running with fucking brand guns and stuff that's not in the movie. So definitely some shit got cut out.
Well, we get one. Which I thought they were going to do for everyone. So the German guy who comes over to their team.
Yep.
I think it's Thomas Kretschmann.
That's right, the blonde guy.
The blonde guy. Whoopah! Editor's note. It is not Thomas Kretschmann. It is Till Schweiger. I guess those Nazis all look alike. Racist. Whoopah! They rescue. They show his little backstory as he's talking to the captured German officer. And they show it. And they give him a title card.
Yeah.
They don't do that with anybody else.
I know.
It's weird.
It's a weird thing, but that's the other thing. Like that's one of the Tarantino things. No character is safe. Like he gets capped.
Yeah.
Right?
They all get that's where Fassbender comes he dies in that scene too.
That's right. And that whole scene, I would say that's potentially the best, if not the first scene, that this is the close second of the best scene in the movie.
It's pretty good.
Because and again, it goes on long. But it's for some reason because they were in the cellar and it was encapsulated and the girl was in it, Dan Kruger, who I also didn't expect to die. But she gets capped in that scene. And I reckon Michael...
No, she lives through that scene.
Does she live through that scene?
She gets killed at the premiere.
That's right. She gets fucked up though a bit, right? Yep. Something goes wrong.
She gets knocked over and she gets her foot hurt.
That's what it is, yeah.
Can't remember what happens, but yeah.
Yeah. But like, let me tell you, in that scene, Michael Fassbender, I reckon that's his best work. I didn't know who he was at the time when I saw this movie.
Yeah, it's almost like, this is certainly an introduction to Christoph Waltz, but is it also my introduction? Was it also my introduction to Fassbender? I'm not sure.
It may well be, because I certainly didn't know who it was, but I remember thinking, that dude is the coolest British dude I'd ever seen, man. He was so baller with his, like, he's speaking German and that sort of thing, then he fucks up a little bit, then he's like, well, if it truly is the end, then I'll continue speaking the Queens. I'm like, oh, this guy's cool as shit.
We're going to go out speaking the Queens, and it would be there's a special place in hell reserved for people who waste good whiskey.
Absolutely. That's why he was so cool, man. And then the shit just went down and became like behind the corner, someone shooting.
And I watched that like twice, that scene, to try and work out who shot who.
It is worth a second look, no doubt. It's really, really good. So I toss up between the opening and that scene as my favorites.
It's an odd film. Like I said, for me, it's a bit tonally inconsistent. We've got the very Shoshana's storyline interspersed with the bastards. And so they feel, I mean, they're not out of place. They're both about the same thing, but one's far more serious. The bastards are almost comical.
Absolutely.
Except that one scene in the cellar, which you're talking about. Mm. Certainly when we get then Brad Pitt's Aldo Raines.
Now let's talk about Aldo Raines.
And Eli Roth's Donnie Donowitz and I can't remember the other dude's name.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a really good point. You're saying that tonal inconsistencies. This Brad Pitt, he's perfectly over the top and kind of stupid in the film. Like he's doing his Italian.
Grazie.
Yeah, he's like, and I'm like, he's not even trying, but that's the gag in the film. Yeah. However, I got to wonder how much of that is Brad Pitt versus Quentin Tarantino, because Quentin Tarantino doesn't write characters quite like that. He does have funny guys, but they're not almost incompetent, but they're not. But, and this is the thing. That's why it's cool with the Brad Pitt thing. He is a little bit like almost shit, but at no time do you disrespect him. At no time do you like, oh, this guy can't get it done, or you know, he's obviously the guy for the job, but now he's doing this for our entertainment.
That's the one scene in the film which I don't think works at all, which is when they got caught? Premiere. And Lander, is that his name?
Lander. Hans Lander.
He obviously knows because he's worked it out based on the shoe and Bridget Hammond.
But also, Brad Pitt trying to do that's obvious. Yeah, that's no one's buying that. Exactly. No.
But he kept getting to say their names like several times over, and I'm like, what's that achieving?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Like, that, it didn't. He knew, and by that stage, he'd worked it all out perfectly.
Yeah.
But was he letting them know that? What's the point of that?
I think. Was it not that he was testing how they speak? No, not really. It wasn't the same thing. Yeah, I don't know. That wasn't. But what was probably a bigger issue for me was that when it finally, you know, you find basically they get captured. It's just Brad Pitt's taking a drink and someone tackles him out of the frame, right? Yep. And I'm like, that's how he gets caught. You know what I mean? It was like a little. And again, I expect him to get caught because he's so unbelievable in his bloody role, you know. So it was a little bit weird, a little bit uneven.
And then it actually doesn't. I was quite surprised. It's literally only 11 minutes or 12 minutes to go in the film when the violence all erupts at the end. Like, it's very quick. It's all over very fast. And here's the strangest thing. I thought that Eli Roth and his other underling, bastard, I thought they lived. But they don't. They die.
Yeah. Everyone gets capped in this
movie. Blows up. I mean, Aldo Raines lives and he's one offsider. But, again, they're all interchangeable. The only ones I remember are Aldo Raines, the German guy, and Eli Roth because it's Eli Roth. Yeah. Otherwise, anyone else could be anyone else. You know what I mean?
I remember the little guy, but I know what you mean. It's essentially a bunch of bastards. But maybe, like, I would say it's a longish movie.
I'd almost like it to have. There's almost feel like two separate films here.
It does feel like two separate. Well, that was his thing. Like, these characters are seemingly at cross purposes, and then at the end, it's all the same.
They'll come together,
Can we talk about Killing Hitler?
Yeah, and Goering. All four of the major players.
Yeah, because now, so this is truly unexpected. Because the whole way through the movie, you're like, yeah, but they're not going to fucking change history. But then he does. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ballsy. Definitely. And it worked out, like, I think in environment of the film, it was fine. It was totally cool. And I was actually impressed at the end that they killed Hitler. I was like, oh, well, this is definitely something you didn't expect. Definitely something that puts an unexpected ending on the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of that, because you would not have picked that.
First time around, it kind of took me out a little bit. Like, you're seeing this with real life characters life setting, and you're completely rewriting history.
That's what it was. When I left the cinema, I'm like, oh, is that okay? And then later on, I decided it was okay. Mm. So, you've got a bit of thinking to do, but then maybe that's the point of the movie. So, you know, big fan.
Yeah, okay. So that were the major problems, so to speak, that I had. I also thought, Brad Pitt, not sure he felt like he was the most out of place character.
Can we assume that's on purpose? Like, is he doing the American
the Tennessee
so much?
So over the top.
Yeah. That it's, because I think the idea is he's just a blunt weapon, right? Kind of. Because he's the guy, just kill them all. Yep. And they all owe him 100 scalps. He's that guy, right, you know? I don't know. I enjoyed every part of his performance.
His entire film, he has this kind of like scrunched up sort of look on his face.
Yeah. I mean, I got to wonder how that negotiation goes, you know? Like, when Brad Pitt does like Snatch, for example, right? So he must have 3 weeks, he shoots this, it's a director that's up and coming or whatever. How much control does he have? Probably all the control. But I like to think that Brad Pitt would only pick a movie that he knows he can do something with, so he'd still respect the director, especially Quentin Tarantino. So, I don't know.
Oh, he was certainly an auteur by this point in his career, Tarantino. So I think he's kind of the guy that everyone wants to work with.
Yeah.
Because is he not doing a Charlie Manson film now?
I've heard of that. Maybe. Yeah. So yeah,
unconfirmed. I haven't seen it come out. Like, this is definitely happening. Then it was talking of him doing maybe an R-rated Star Trek film.
I heard that. Yeah, I know. Chatter about that stuff as
well. Yeah, again, nothing confirmed, but this is just...
I don't even know how that would go. I have no idea how that would go, but God, I want
to
see it.
And then he threatened to retire a while back after making his 10th film. He just wanted to go out 10, yes, done.
That's right.
So that seems to not be true anymore.
He's a bit precious these days. He's had, you know, he's basically been a star since he started, so yeah. I don't know. But I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you think, because this is full of Quentin Tarantino's signature, well,
including
type
his
things.
Foot fetish.
Yes, the foot fetish.
It's like, God damn, once you know that's what it is.
That I don't mind so much. But what the thing is, like, I'm talking about like Mexican standoffs and stuff like that, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Is having Quentin Tarantino's signature moves or different signature scenes in a film, does it add to the film because it's exciting when it arrives, or is it shit because you're waiting for it to happen and you've seen it all before? Do you think that...
Was there a Mexican standoff with different people pointing guns? It wasn't
as like Reservoir Dogs type thing, but it was everyone had guns in the cellar, for example, and we're just like that kind of thing. And the tension is who's going to fire first or who's going to pop off first, right?
Because it all happens... Yeah, well, you're right. There is that one moment where they're pointing guns at each other's nuts, and yes.
That's right. Yep. So, I mean, for me, I look forward to those scenes. Like, if you know it's a Quentin Tarantino movie and you're doing this, but I've heard some people say that, like, oh, we saw this before and that. I don't think so. I think he's original enough to make it different each time. So
feels a bit rough.
I know. I don't agree with it.
If that's your biggest criticism about Quentin Tarantino.
Exactly. That his style is too, like, you know, you see it coming or whatever. Nah. But I never feel that way. I'm always genuinely interested in what's about to happen. So his movies. So that's me. This movie was fucking awesome, dude.
That's great. It's a very good film. I liked it a lot. I think I may even, despite my sort of rewriting history, I think I may in 2009, which is a pretty weak year from film as far as I remember it, I may have had this as my number one of the year.
I would probably, yeah, and pretty much. I mean, what was it up against that year? All sorts of Hurt Locker and shit like that.
Okay.
Not shit like that. Hurt Locker is amazing.
Hurt Locker's a good film. Yeah. But I didn't probably like it as much as this, but I didn't love this movie. As I said, it's nowhere near Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction. I think I also like Django better than this film, but I'd have to watch Django again to be sure.
Mm. No, I like this film more than Django,
okay,
I think.
Yes, that's
I think
fine. I'm not going to argue about it, like, in the sense of I get it. And even Hateful Eight, I'd have to watch that again before I had a real sense of...
Hateful Eight's better the second time around, I thought. Okay. I thought.
I liked it
when you can
time.
Skip a bit. It's fucking long, man.
It is long. He's getting a little bit...
No, he's not going to be like more succinct as he gets older either. It's going to get longer.
Yeah, you're allowed to do more of what you want.
Totally.
So, yeah. All right, well, let's give it a score and wrap it all up then for this Patreon exclusive review.
Sure, 83.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to that, actually. I'm going flat on 80.
Nice. Damn.
Two big recommendations, obviously. You've seen it. Everyone knows about it. Let us know what you think if you're a Patreon or a patron. Did you like this movie? Where does it rank in Tarantino's sort of oeuvre of films? And we'll take it from there. It's been a pleasure once again.
Thanks, folks. We'll catch you again in the next Patreon special.
Yeah, coming very, very soon. Thanks again for all your contributions. And stay... I don't know. We need to come up with something to end these things.
I am listening. No.
No, you're listening.
I like... we'll have to come up with something. I'm not going to ruin it on the fly.
We won't subject you to all of that. There will be a behind the scenes coming also very soon for those at the $10 level and above. But otherwise, catch you next time.
See you guys.